Chapter 14 Fire Caller. When sunset drew near, the time to prepare for departure came. Rays of sunlight moved at an angle through the treetops to cut out dappled patterns in the underbrush, and the area around Cooley became a bustle of activity. The men gave a last call to use the latrine. When everyone who needed to had done so, it was covered with dirt and a few plant seeds were scattered over it by Tuljapa before the final layers of soil and fire ashes were added. Firewood was gathered and packed upon Cooley while Tuljapa stood on the top of a rock to snip the wind. Travelers made sure they had gathered all their things, and the ramp was pushed from the edge of Cooley's shell. Tuljapa counted the passengers, and then addressed the crowd in the languages he knew, starting with Burumish and moving to his own tongue.
Tonight we move through a more dangerous part of the swamp, where the waters are deeper and Cooley might swim some. If water washes up on his back, it will not be for long. Make sure to wake when I call you if this happens, so that you can keep your things from floating off in the water that comes up under the edge of the tent. It should not, but even a mighty Tortanga can stumble when the force of water is against him.
Some of the passengers found this less than pleasing and grumbled among themselves. Makwa found it exciting and went to make sure all of his belongings were packed inside his Zarmuthgut backpack. Tuljapa had them take down the covering from the benches, and Makwa helped Shimna fold it, roll it, and store it in the big wooden crate by the fire basin. They had prepared the torches earlier, so they set them in their stands after they lit them. Makwa chewed on some viwa pods and watched as the sun set behind some of the large trees on the horizon. They'd only come into view just that morning.
Shimna, what are those trees?
She grinned.
Those are wazah trees, Makwa. My home is in a big grove of them. They look big from here, but when you get closer, they are much, much bigger.
As the light faded, the big trees became nothing more than clumps of darkness that blotted out the lowest stars on the edge of the sky before they vanished altogether. Tuljapa made them keep the fire burning high in the basin and made good use of the extra firewood they had collected that day, which was nice because it provided a little bit larger radius to the light around the travelers. Makwa watched him as the evening moved into night and noted the movements of his tail. He leaned toward Saruth on the bench, who cocked an ear in his direction.
Is Tuljapa worried about something? He's moving his tail like he knows someone's trying to step on it.
Saruth nodded.
Yes, something troubles him. Perhaps it is the thought of Azuga's being near. They've caused trouble for travelers before, but most of them have been raft travelers who must travel the open waterways. We have Cooley with us, but that does not mean the beast will leave us alone. As one of the men by the border told me until Joppa confirmed, they have been very aggressive this year.
Makwa remembered the stuffed one at the museum, and a cold fear settled in his stomach as he envisioned what its wicked teeth and long claws might do to him if it was allowed to come after him. It was the stuff of nightmares, and he shivered even though the night was only a little bit cool. He licked his nose and stood.
Today was long. I'm going to bed.
Saru smiled.
Sleep well. I'll see you in the morning.
Makwa nodded and made his way to the tent and found it empty. He picked a warm spot in the very edge and drew the sleeping furs all about him. It took a while with the thoughts of danger in his head, but eventually he found slumber. Makwa's dreams were strange again. This time he was on a ship in a stormy sea. At first, he was alone on the ship as lightning clashed and thunder roared overhead in the rainy skies. He looked around and saw the ship unmanned, nobody there to sail it as the ocean tossed it about and tried to crush it with hands of cold black water. Clinging to the mast, Makwa watched as a wave came up high over the deck and then slammed down. Water tugged at his legs and tried to pull him from the mast and sweep him over the rails into the churning cauldron below. As the wave washed from the deck, Fazugas appeared, revealed by the retreating liquid, and came after Makwa with their horrible screeching cries filling his ears. Makwa woke and felt water that had soaked under the edge of his sleeping furs. There was yelling out in front of the tent, and in a few moments his fur stood on end at the sound of a screeching wail. Soon more joined it, and the constant sound grew into a great din of horrific cries that filled the night. Makwa grabbed his spear and crept out in front of the tent to see what was going on. Some of the travelers were waving makeshift torches in the air as small sticks came flying downward at them from the trees. Milo was clutching his head. Blood oozed from a place under his hand while Zessen stood guard over him. Lady Daroth cowered nearby under one of the wooden passenger benches, with both her hands over her head. Shimna had erected a cover over her father's seat on the front edge of Cooley's shell, and had a big torch in her hand that she waved in front of them while Tol'Jaffa concentrated on keeping Cooley moving. As they moved on, the screeching got louder, and more things began to come down from the trees. Various people got cuts and bruises from the sticks thrown at them. Two travelers that were Wazella natives opened their backpacks and pulled out bracelets and flybacks. As the light from the fire brought the bravest Fazugas into view, the Wazellans threw the spinning weapons and smashed their foes from the trees. One of the men went over to Tol'Jaffa and Shimna to protect them, and took her place, holding up the covering. He drew a club and smashed a large stick from the air as it came down.
Girl, go hide in the tent.
I will not leave my daddy.
I will protect him. Go!
Shimna growled at the man and held her torch, staying beside her father as the rain of sticks subsided. She looked around, ears back, tail twitching behind her. There was a pause and things got quiet, but for the hungry flames of the torches. Makwa crept out of the tent and looked around. Was that it?
Is it over?
No sooner had the woman asked the question than with an eruption of screeches, several Fazugas swung out on vines over Cooley's shell to land among the passengers. Shimna shrieked as one launched toward her, its claws outstretched. The man standing beside Tol'Jaffa snarled and lunged, smashed the creature's hands away from the girl with an overhead swing of his club, backhanded it in the face with the next, and then kicked it screaming over the front edge of the shell where it was run over in the dark.
Girl, I said go!
Shimna was now convinced to the point of obeying and ran toward the tent.
Shimna!
Makwa met her halfway and tugged her with him. They both ran into the tent and hid under some of the sleeping furs. From their hiding place, they watched the conflict erupt into the next phase as Zessen and Nebo drew swords and began carving up the creatures. Travelers used staves, clubs, torches, fishing spears, even bare claws, sending the injured Fazugas fleeing, only to see them replaced by the next group that swung out or dropped onto the shell of the Tortanga. The adults were handling the Fazugas well enough, but the animals just kept coming, and Makwa had to wonder how long the travelers could fight before injuries started taking them out of the battle. These monsters had sharp claws and teeth. Shimna clung to him, and he could smell her fear.
Makwa, are we going to die?
It sure looked like it. He gritted his teeth.
No, Saruth won't let us die tonight.
No sooner had he said it than he caught sight of Saruth. Standing in the eye of the storm, the man reached into his robe, pulled out a few small crystals, and leapt up atop one of the benches. He began chanting a song and dropped the crystals into the air before him. They began to glow red and spin around him. Even when a stick hit Saruth in the shoulder, he didn't flinch. The Fazugas atop the shell began to back off and flee in larger numbers as they were injured by the weapons of the fighting travelers, who stood together, circled around those who could not fight under the direction of Daroth's Lathmosian bodyguards. Even more were frightened away when Saruth uttered a loud whoop, and the crystals spinning about him became blazing balls of fire. He moved his hands in big arcs and sent the burning orbs into the trees. There were horrible screeches of agony from the animals as they suffered burned fur and concussions or worse, and fell from the trees into the water and mud. Very soon, the ones in the nearby trees began to flee in terror from Saruth's wrath, and as fast as the attack had begun, it was over. The fireballs moved back into a slow spin around Saruth, and there was silence but for the fleeing creatures in the distance, the movement of Cooley, sloshing water, and the sounds of hungry flames consuming the air. Everyone stared at the singer. Saruth closed his eyes.
Sleep now, mighty flames. Cool now, stones of fire. Rest now be your claim. Slumber for you my desire.
He held out a hand, and the stones faded dark and moved to fill his palm. He slipped them back into his pocket. One of the travelers whispered to another, and Mako could barely make out the words.
He's a singer. I knew there was something frightful about him.
Makwa got up and walked over. He felt a chill in the air near Saruth as he drew close enough to touch the place where the blood stained the shoulder of his robes.
Saruth, are you okay?
Saruth opened his eyes and looked down at Makwa as he whispered something Makwa didn't understand. The rhythmic words rhymed in the man's language of choice. Makwa blinked and concentrated on the words.
See the power, young Maqua. Songs are a gift from the Creator to us, but those we're with now fear me. Remember this, inevitable, regrettable. Always hide such when you're able.
Saruth huffed and sat on a bench.
Maqua, will you get me some water?
He nodded and went to the tent for a water skin. He brought it back and handed it to Saruth. He looked around and noticed that the travelers seemed afraid of the man, with the exception of the Lazella natives. Even as wounds were tended, they kept staring at Saruth and shared furtive words. Saruth drank the water for a while and said nothing. He watched Maqua and seemed to search his eyes as he too sat silent. Maqua reached behind his ears to scratch.
You do magic, Saruth?
The man shook his head and gulped down more water.
No, it is not magic. It is a gift from Jehovah. As I told you, there's no magic that is not in us all.
Maqua pulled back Saru's sleeve and used the light of a torch to look at the bleeding wound on his shoulder. It looked pretty deep and had splinters of wood poking from it. He asked Shimna to get him some of the black liquid from Saru's pack, which she did. He applied the painkiller to a small ball of thuth and pressed it into Saru's wound. Saruth winced at first, but soon sighed in relief. Maqua drew the cloth back and used delicate efforts with his claws to draw out the splinters from the flesh while Shimna held a torch for him. It took a few minutes, but he got them all and pressed the cloth back against the wound.
I think you're supposed to hold this. Can you?
Saruth nodded and leveled his ice-blue eyes at Maqua as he gripped the cloth and held it to the wound.
You possess more strength of heart than you know, Maqua. Not everyone has the capacity you just displayed to tend the injured with danger so recently at hand. You will soon be a man, and your mane will soon grow if that itching behind your ears is what I believe it to be.
Maqua sniffed at Saruth and shrugged.
I didn't even think about it. I guess it will. As for helping the sick, I had to help my mother when she was sick. There wasn't anyone else. One day she fell and she had to tell me how to...
He looked away and faltered as he thought about his mother. Her smile haunted him as he envisioned her lying helpless on her deathbed. His thoughts were interrupted by the touch of a warm hand on his shoulder as Saruth patted it.
Go back to bed, Maqua. I will sleep soon as well, after I help the others with their injuries and talk to Tol'Jaapa.
He nodded and turned to go to the tent and curl up in the damp sleeping furs. He hadn't been in the furs more than a little while when Shimna moved near him and curled up beside him in her sleep. For once, he was glad she liked to snuggle, because her presence near him was comforting. Even though she didn't have the same sin as his mother had, there was something undefined that was very much like her.